You have the emergence in human society of this thing that's called the state. What is the state? The state is this organized bureaucracy. It is the police department. It is the army, the navy. It is the prison system, the courts, and what have you. This is the state. It is a repressive organization. But the state, and well, you know, you've got to have the police, because if there were no police, look at what you'd be doing to yourselves. You'd be killing each other if there were no police. But the reality is, the police become necessary in human society.
That was Omali Yeshitila opening the song Police State by Dead Prez. Yeshitila is the chairman of the African People's Socialist Party, and this year marks the 40th anniversary of the party's founding. Tonight on Circle A Radio, we hear from Nibinga Zimbabwe, the director of agitation and propaganda for the African People's Socialist Party, and Wendy Snyder of the African People's Solidarity Committee West Coast. We'll also hear a speech by Chairman Omali Yeshitila. Stay tuned.
This is Nibinga Zimbabwe of the African People's Socialist Party, based in St. Petersburg, Florida.
The African People's Socialist Party is an African revolutionary organization. What African People's Socialist Party USA, let me say, because since our founding, we've broadened to build the African Socialist International, which is the International African Revolutionary Organization. But the APSP USA was founded in 1972 through the merging of three organizations, one called the Junta of Militant Organizations, JOMO, another Black Rights Fighters, and also the Black Study Group, merged to form the African People's Socialist Party in 1972 during a period of serious government repression, you know, of the defeat of the Black Power movement of the 1960s, the military defeat of the Black Power movement in the 1960s, where, you know, the government was engaged in all kinds of, you know, terrible assaults on the African community and our leadership, assassinations, you know, destroying organizations, infiltration, and all those types of things, imprisonment of you know, revolutionaries and activists. And of course, the party has had its history didn't begin in 1972. Its beginnings didn't begin in 1972. Came before that, really. Our chairman, Omali Yeshitila, was actually during the 1960s and a field organizer for the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, a SNCC, and actually it built the first membership-based SNCC organization. And was based in St. Petersburg, Florida, and actually from there built JOMO, one of the organizations that merged to build the African People's Socialist Party in 1968, and of course the party in 1972. It's a revolutionary organization. It's an African internationalist organization that recognizes, one, that Africans everywhere around the world constitute one single nation, that the borders that separate us are illegitimate borders, whether be they the borders drawn by Europe in the 1885 Berlin Conference, or the borders that have been created in our brains that have us calling ourselves things like African Americans or Jamaicans or all these other things, you know, as opposed to African people as one people. We are, like Garvey, we recognize the necessity of having one single organization worldwide to lead our struggle for unification and liberation of Africa and African people. And like I said, we're revolutionary organizations. We don't believe this system has any redeeming qualities. We understand that this imperialist system is parasitic and was born off the attack on Africa and the Americas. And in order for African people and other peoples, other oppressed peoples around the world to have a future, it requires that this system be buried. And, of course, that has to happen through revolutionary struggle. And we also recognize that that struggle has to be led by the African working class. So that's the African People's Socialist Party, and we've been, like I said, since 1972, organizing throughout the U.S. and more broadly than that, you know, having organizers in places like the U.S. and Canada, and Bahamas, and Colombia, England, Belgium, France, of course, in Africa, in places like Sierra Leone and Guinea-Conakry, Kenya, and doing work in other places like South Africa, et cetera. So that's kind of who the African People's Socialist Party is. From the 1972 founding to now, there hasn't been a break in our leading struggle. And in fact, we took on the question of keeping the Black Power Movement alive and exposing and defeating the counterinsurgent war that the U.S. government has waged against the African community. But in 96, here in St. Petersburg, Florida, we had a situation similar to what happened in Philadelphia in 1985 with the MOVE bombing, in that, you know, in this particular case, the police had killed this 18-year-old kid, and there were rebellions in the city following that. This was in October 1996. In that case, again, when that rebellion kicked off, they blamed our movement. They said the Uhurus are the ones who were responsible. That's what they call us because, you know, we say Uhuru when we greet folk because Uhuru is Swahili for freedom. In 96, after this rebellion, they targeted our movement, and in November 13th of 1996, they attacked our headquarters. This was the day that they were bringing out the verdicts to justify the police, as they always do. They did a preemptive strike on this headquarters. In fact, earlier in the day, they had came and arrested a couple of our members, with SWAT teams, you know, saying it was for, you know, expired license tags. Then later on in the day, when the community meeting was scheduled, regular weekly community meeting was scheduled, they surrounded our building with 300 police from various police agencies. And, you know, said on the loudspeaker, you have 5 minutes to evacuate. We are declaring this an unlawful assembly. And 5 seconds later, they start shooting tear gas at the building. In fact, they used all the tear gas in the city on this building.
Wow.
And if people have, you know, history, have any experience with, like, tear gas, then the canisters, they catch fire. So they were shooting them in the trees around the building. They were shooting them on the roof of the building, trying to set the building on fire. People in the community were coming out and pulling branches off the trees to try to, you know, put the fire out. On top of that, like I said, this is a community meeting with 100 or so people in here, children, women, men, you know, and they had 300 cops outside. They had a helicopter and a plane. And, you know, folks were concerned, you know, because, you know, we know about the MOVE bombing in 1985 when they dropped the bomb from a helicopter on the community, you know. And so what happened is people in this community come out, this community where we had been organizing for more than 30 years at that point. People in this community came out with bandanas on their faces, with bricks, bottles, automatic weapons. and they pushed the police out the community. They pushed the police out the community. They shot the helicopter out the sky, you know, even like the newspaper the next day quoted the cops in charge as saying, you know, pull the troops out, we're under heavy fire. So, you know, there's a long history in this city of serious kind of resistance. And subsequent to that, you know, they didn't kill another African. The police didn't kill another African for another 8 years. And even when they had, then, they had to be concerned about rebellions, because just about every time there's been a rebellion to kick off, and every time there's been some kind of resistance to it, a resistance that each time has become more and more sophisticated. So there's a long history of resistance.
That was Nyabinga speaking on Blog Talk Radio's program, The Unchained Mind. Next up, Circle A Radio talks with Nyabinga Zimbabwe and Wendy Snyder.
When we talk about the struggle in the 1960s, we're looking at even before then, you know, 50s, where anti-colonial struggles were raging around the world. And it made it necessary for imperialism, which, first of all, was born as white power in the world. And during this period in the 1960s, it was being really challenged. You know, colonialism, direct white rule, direct foreign white rule, was really being challenged everywhere around the world. And it made it necessary for the colonialists to make changes, to facilitate continuing to control the resources of Africa and other places around the world. And so what you saw was a shift from colonialism, direct white rule, to neo-colonialism, which is white power in black space. That's what we saw in the 60s. You saw the installation of neo-colonial regimes all over Africa. So we have flag independence. We got an independent situation in all these different territories that were carved up by Europe for Europe in the first place. But you don't have a real independence. You have a situation where we got a flag now. We've got a leader who looks like us, but the economy is still controlled out of France or Britain or the U.S. Neo-colonialism replacing the old colonialism. And but the situation is just as bad, if not worse. The resource is still being stripped. 80% of this resource called coltan is found in Congo. And this resource called coltan is necessary for production of computers and cell phones and virtually any electronic device. But Congo, Africans in Congo are suffering serious kind of poverty, despite the fact that the majority of resources in the world of this thing called coltan is coming from Congo. And that's because those resources, that value is being taken from Africa. That's, you know, they call it trade, but it ain't no trade. You know, it's extraction, you know, and Africans are not benefiting from that at all. So you have the same old colonialism that's just got a black face. What we've seen in this recent period is neo-colonialism brought to its highest extent with the selection and subsequent election of Barack Obama. So in this period of crisis where, you know, off the back of the George Bush regime, which had, you know, tried to bomb everybody in the world back into submission, and that not working, that's just working to increase resistance by colonized peoples around the world. You saw an imperialism that attempted to resolve its crisis through neocolonialism to the highest extent by putting its Africans up as the president of the United States. So that's what we see in the world. We see neocolonialism, but it's in crisis. And it's in Kwame Nkrumah, who was an incredible African patriot who fought for a united, liberated Africa, talked about neocolonialism as the last stage of imperialism. And we recognize that is true.
I just want to add, I think for white people who voted for Obama, you know, some did with this idea that, okay, that's, you know, this is it. This is my contribution, you know, to supporting the black community. I voted for the black, you know, president, or they saw, you know, some real possibility there that was, you know, that they're starting to hopefully take that bumper sticker off their car and see, you know, see Obama for what he does represent, which is this different face, you know, of imperialism, is what Nubinga said. You know, there's no solution under this system. These are just different sectors, you know, of imperialism. It's really not the hope and change that, you know, you were counting on.
What we're seeing is that the Obama solution, while it may have had some people staggering, including Africans themselves, you know, inside the U.S. and oppressed people in other places, its effect is not a lasting one. And we see that change that was already happening in the world continuing to bubble and to grow more and more. And we've seen it in Egypt, we see it in Tunisia, we see it in Congo right now, we see it in Nigeria. Peoples around the world are really struggling, not only colonialism, not only direct white rule, but also neo-colonialism. And, you know, I think this is the time for everybody to get on board with this real change that's happening in the world. People need to join the African People's Socialist Party. If you're an African, you need to be in the African People's Socialist Party or in the Uhuru Movement. If you're a North American, you need to be in the Uhuru Solidarity Movement. If you want to be a part of this changing world, if you want to be a part of this wave of change that's happening, this is the place to be.
That was Nubinga Zimbabwe and Wendy Snyder. You are listening to Circle A Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland. Next, we'll hear a speech from Omali Yeshitela, chairman of the African People's Socialist Party.
First of all, let me express my deepest appreciation to the African People's Solidarity Committee for carrying out its mandate to do the events in solidarity with African people. I'm happy that to be able to participate in this, my second, is it's the second one I think I've done this year. And I want to express appreciation to all of you who have come out as well. This issue of solidarity is one that we think is extremely important. And people have, before I have stepped up, talked about how I and the African People's Socialist Party have fought for a long period of time for African liberation. But I would say that while that is true, we have always understood that the struggle of African people is part and parcel of the struggle of oppressed and exploited people all over the world. We understand that there is no history of African people separate and apart from the history of the peoples in the world. We are not like Europeans or Americans who sort of see themselves in isolation from everybody else. We understand that ours is a part of the history of the world. And we also understand that the history of the last period of the world, the history of capitalism, the emergence of capitalism, is one that has defined the relationships of all the people on the planet Earth. That everybody is impacted by this development, this emergence of capitalism. And it's really important for us to understand that this discussions that we're having, I think, are extremely important. These are not just some idealistic discussions, feel-good discussions, but people are offering up, I think, very important analyses, and I'm hoping that there's enough intellectual energy in this room to be able to entertain like the analyses that are coming forth. It's not just feel-good speech that people are engaged in making here. And it's important for us to get to the root of the crisis, the root of the contradictions that we are confronted with, the root of this profound contradiction that has existed between black people and white people, for example, in this country. We can't even, you know, we can pretend that it does not exist, but it's here and it has been here. And in many ways, it's a frightening kind of contradiction, perhaps the most profound, perhaps the most frightening contradiction that white people have to deal with, and certainly Africans have had to deal with since our being brought to this country, is this relationship between white people and black people. It's been, if there weren't children in the room, I'd say, you know, like it's been a hell of a relationship. Yeah. And it has been a bloody, brutal relationship. It has been a relationship of the worst kind of slavery, oppression, murder, genocide. That's the nature of the relationship. That's how it's always been. Even it was that way even when we had so little power that we had to buck dance and sing, songs about mint juleps for the master. It was always that way. And so that's just a reality. And I think everybody kind of knows that. But let's get to the essence of what the contradictions are, because as Comrade Glenn Ford mentioned, I think, in his presentation, that the whole issue of democracy in this country has been one that has been defined by the struggle of black people, by African people. At the time when this country was torn with fascism, at the time when they were electrocuting the Rosenbergs and what have you, at the time when the Communist Party had to go underground, etc., it was real unity with fascism that existed in Germany and other places that existed in this country. It was the struggle for Africans, by black people, for civil rights that kept the society open. That was the basis for the whole the struggle for democracy in this country. We have been the ones. This incredible African people kidnapped from our homeland. Kidnapped, and I think it's important to mention that because people like to fantasize about the nature of this country. They like to talk about how America is a country of immigrants, my ass. Because Africans are not immigrants. We are captives. We were captives when we were brought here. We were a people who did not come here looking for a better way of life, but lost a better way of life as a consequence of having got here. So that's a good starting place. Understand that. We have to understand that. We have to understand when we talk about the Mexicans and the illegal aliens coming across the border, that an actual war that stole California, New Mexico, Nevada, much of the West and Southwest, war took that land but at gunpoint, and using the same kind of rationale for doing it that America is using in places like Afghanistan and Iraq and other places even today. And now the people whose land, who find themselves landless, right, now are considered illegal aliens for crossing an artificial border that was put there at their expense. And then all the people in this country get fed pablum that they call history. And of course, the ones who have the power are the ones who define what is historically correct and significant. And they have created a history emerged. They have created a history that actually obscures real relationships in the real world. And because capitalism that is extolled by every president and every pundit of significance in this country has no redeeming qualities. It is a social system that has its origin in genocide and slavery. The question, you know, that could be asked about why is it that white people, this minority population on the planet Earth, is so much better off than everybody else? Why is it that half the people on Earth, you know, live off less than $2 a day? Why is it that so many people on Earth, perhaps most people on Earth, are confronted with the issue of not having clean water? You know, in places where some of the wealth, the most significant resources are concentrated, that is the reality that we're confronted with. That is not normal. And of course, the answer is, if you listen to the not only George Bush who gave a ready answer, it's because we are good, right? Right? And that's not Bush is not far-fetched, because everything that we learn in our experience in this country explains this reality to us. I mean, where do you get the story of a fat white guy living in the North Pole where it's too cold to work, right? Who has these magical elves or something, you know, who create all the goodies, right? And then, you know, every year using a reindeer, you know, reindeer and a sled, you know, run around and drop off nice things to all the good people, right? And of course, what it is part of the philosophical underpinning of this country that explains how wealth is created. You know, it wasn't worked for. You didn't create it. So it came from this fat white guy, this jolly white guy, you know, where it is even too cold to work and it just gets dropped off because we are good. Which is an absurdity, but it feeds into the psyche. It feeds into the philosophical underpinning of this country and this world that we live in, because it's not just here, because actually Santa Claus, you know, comes from Holland, right? From the Netherlands, right? And there's a story to be told about that as well. But I won't belabor the point. The point is that there is a lot of fantastic fluff that poses as history and as explanation for the reality that we are confronted with and are trying to find ourselves out of. Because nobody, I think, in his or her right mind wants to live in this world where there's so much conflict, so much contradiction all the time. We'd rather be able to enjoy this planet Earth and be able to live without fear. And but in order to do that, white people have a lot of work to do in understanding this reality. And at one point, I thought 9/11 would contribute to that. Because when you have power, you don't have to understand anything by anybody else on Earth. If you got power, you just take everything for granted. But 9/11, I thought, would be a kind of wake-up call after the initial knee-jerk reaction, go and kill everybody, you know. I thought that it would be possible to have meaningful discussion in this country. Because if, in fact, there are people who are willing to get on an airplane and kill themselves just to make sure that they killed and destroyed white people and things that are important to America, it would seem to me that you'd want to know why the hell that happened. You know, why the hell did it happen? What, you know, talking about fight against terrorism, why the hell is everybody pissed off? You know, it seemed to me at some juncture you'd want to know the answer to the question. Why the hell are they pissed off? You know, why is under every bed I got to look for a so-called terrorist? Right? And, of course, that's not the question that's being debated at all. You know, even on these news shows where they put up these false, these straw men, you know, what do they call them, the pros and the cons on every question is false, right and left, that they offer up on TV. They don't deal with this question, why? Why is it happening? And the reason why it's happening, of course, is because the whole thing, the whole capitalist world, revolves around being able to extract tremendous amounts of value from oppressed peoples around the world. That there are people who are dying in Afghanistan, in Iraq, and all over Africa, and much of the world, so that there can be peaches in the supermarkets in this country, regardless of what season it is. You can go and find a peach. You can go and find something that you want. Where you eat better Chinese food than the Chinese eat in China. The fact is that there is this relationship that is here. And it is not something that all of the people decided, you know, Africans in Africa said, hey, you know, 400 years. Can you see it now in a people sitting up in Angola somewhere? You know, 400 years from now, you know. I think they're going to invent the National Basketball Association, right? Why don't we get a jump on it, right? And go now. That wasn't how it happened. You know, African people were kidnapped, were brought here screaming and yelling. We were not the ones who were jumping on Mayflowers and things like that to get the hell out of an oppressive and sick and dying Europe. That rescued itself through slavery, that rescued itself through colonialism and oppression against the rest of the peoples of the world. And so you have this world now that's created through stealing everything that the vast majority of the people need for their existence. South America, for how long was it to call the backyard? Isn't that how they characterize it? The backyard of the U.S. and what have you. We were all objects of history. And white people in Europe and here were subjects of history, which makes it extremely difficult today for white people to hear. Because for so long it has been this power, this relationship oppressed and oppressor nations, where those in the oppressor nation have been the subjects of history and have defined the relationship, the world, from its own perspective. And nobody else could talk back because there was always a gunboat in the harbor. You know, there was always Marines. There were always the police. There was always the sheriff or the person who was over the plantation to do something terrible to you if you said something different, right? So nobody else could talk back. But now increasingly, that is changing. The resistance of the peoples around the world now represents itself in our own articulation of our own reality. And guess what? As we become subjects of history, you become objects of history, and then you hear yourself defined in a fashion you never heard of before. Damn! That's not the me that I thought I was, right? Now the slave can articulate, and damn it, he really doesn't like the slave master, no matter what he said in the past. He hates your slave master. That's a natural and normal reaction to the slave master. It is. This is, and so now increasingly people in Afghanistan and people in all these other places, you read about Hugo Chavez in the newspaper. What do they say? He continues to be defiant. What the hell are you talking about, defiant? Why the hell are you defiant to whom? What the hell is, who is he defiant? Like somehow, because anybody stands up to the United States, there's some problem and defiant. You know, and all of the red, white, and blue blood pumping through the heart of every loyal, patriotic American, you understand? Defiant, how dare he be defiant? You know? You've seen that kind of language used to talk about grown people who are supposed to be heads of state, of sovereign entities, etc. But it's changed. And the world has changed. And let me just say this really quickly. One thing I just want to speak to, because I know we got a tight agenda, is that Africa and African people suffer an incredible slander. And people who know better allow it to happen for too often. Everybody in this country, whether no matter how old you are, is familiar with the fact that 30, 40 years ago, the people around the world knew of America for blowing up churches, killing black babies, lynching African people, water hoses, electric prods, and things like that, against people who just wanted to register to join the Democratic Party. They weren't looking for Fidel Castro. They weren't trying to join, you know, some so-called Al-Qaeda. They just wanted to join the damn Democratic Party. And America murdered those people. And not only did America murder them and murdered them to the tremendous silence of the vast majority of the white population in this country. I'm talking about, you know, I know there was this hidden sympathies, and I know five people that you know. We all know the same five people who went out on the demonstrations and marched with Martin Luther King and stuff like that. Those are the exceptions, but I'm talking about in general, that happened. That was the reality we were confronted with. Everybody knew that. But today, everybody knew what had happened to Africa. You know, when we talk about slavery in America, the fact is that slavery was an attack on Africa. Black people in this country didn't pop up on Mississippi plantations under turnip leaves. And a war was waged against Africa that brought us here. That's what was necessary to get us here, an actual war. People fought to keep their children, their kith and their kin where they were. So here we are. Now, in this place and in this relationship today, and people are struggling to end this kind of relationship. And our movement is opposed and offended by this tremendous slander of African people. So all of a sudden, we look, and now it is not the white people who killed us, enslaved us, and did all these terrible things to us. You know, now it is young black men in particular who are the terrorists. Everybody's afraid of young black men. Everybody's afraid of the black community. They don't even have to offer a rational excuse. They attacked the Uhuru House 10 years ago in this city and used all the tear gas in the city, all the tear gas that the city had, they used against that building. They said the reason we are doing it is because after murdering Tyrone Lewis, we don't want the people in the Uhuru House to talk about it in the black community. They said that. They attacked our building. The only support that came to us was from the African People's Solidarity Committee. Where were those freedom-loving, constitutional-protecting, you know, white people in this country, in this city? All you got to do is say it's in the black community, and everybody knows the black community is riddled with crime. And even that's BS. Crime is where you find it. And if you put, and I'm talking about crime as defined by the bourgeoisie now. That's what I'm talking about, you know. Because there's a crime that if you steal a Pinto, remember a Pinto automobile? If you stole a Pinto made by Ford, if you bump the bumper, back bumper like that, you know, pretty solidly, the thing would catch on fire. That was not a crime. Forbes didn't commit a crime when he did that. Steal one. That was the crime. You understand? That was the crime. You know, so, but, you know, so even according to bourgeois law, and everybody knows that law is the opinion of the ruling class, right? Even according to bourgeois law, if you put as many police on every corner in the white community as you put in the African community with the same attitudes that they have in our community, damn it, you'd have more crime in the white community than you have in the African community. Much, much more time.
You are listening to a speech by Omali Yeshitola, chairman of the African People's Socialist Party, here on Circle A Radio. Tonight we're taking a look at the African People's Socialist Party, its history and importance today. We now return to our speech here on KBOO Community Radio.
My son was arrested in this city by some 30 armed, ski mask wearing, special weapon carrying cops that shut down the entire African community. They arrested him for marijuana. Well, people shouldn't smoke marijuana. After all, it's illegal. But damn it, if it were illegal and if they were looking for marijuana, why didn't they hit the dorm at the university, at the universities here? That's where the best marijuana is located. Everybody knows that. But it's colonialism. It's colonialism. It's colonialism. Don't tell me about I'm a citizen. If I were a citizen, we wouldn't be looking at this difference in how Africans are treated and white people are treated. I'm tired of the slander. I'm tired of looking up and seeing my children going to prison 50, 60, 70 years at 15, 16 years old. It is incredible. You must be opposed to that as well. And finally, I want to say that it's not good enough just to say peace. People like to, you know, peace, I want peace. Hell, George Bush wanted peace. He did. If he'd have been quite satisfied if people stopped fighting and just accepted the imperialist way of life. It's only when people rose up against imperialism that the peace was disturbed. So he wanted an imperialist peace. The slave masters wanted peace. It's only when the slaves rose up that there was no longer peace. It was peaceful until Nat Turner started saying, strike at night and spare no one. It was peace. But damn it, you have to be opposed to injustice. You have to recognize that what is happening to the African community in this country and around the world is wrong. We travel and work in places like Sierra Leone in West Africa, where some of the best diamonds in the world are located and come to this country on a regular basis. People are talking blood diamonds, mine. That is so ridiculous. All of it's blood diamonds. You're talking about a situation where an African who brings up the diamonds out of the mines in Sierra Leone is paid 32 cents and a cup of rice a day, where they don't even have clean drinking water. Don't even have a national electric grid when all of the diamonds and resources are coming out of there, coming to this country and coming to Europe. And you're talking about an AFRICOM, a U.S. military presence to keep it that way. Yes. You're talking about a U.S. military even before an AFRICOM that overthrew and murdered every decent force on the continent of Africa that tried to make Africa belong to African people. Yes. That has overthrown governments from one point of the earth to the other as a matter of form on a regular basis. Well, you know, we had to overthrow Saddam. You know, even if there were no weapons of mass destruction, he was a bad guy. Saddam Hussein couldn't live long enough. Even if he lived long as the mythological Methuselah, he could not have committed as many offenses against humanity is George Washington, who was a slave owner. He couldn't have committed as many offenses as the pedophile Thomas Jefferson, who raped 13-year-old Sally Hennings, who was a slave. And now, after most of the liberals had to admit that he did have this sexual thing with Sally Hennings, who bore him all these children, they now characterize this as an affair. How the hell can a slave master have an affair with a slave? It's not like she can say, not tonight, honey, I got a headache. You understand? That doesn't work that way. But Africans have been objects in this fashion, used in this fashion here and around the world, and you must oppose it with all your might. It is not enough to be just for peace. You have to be for justice. You have to unite with the oppressed peoples against their oppression, even if it means uniting against the United States. Yes, you must do that. Yes, you must do that. You must do that. You must do that. Listen, I have to sit down. But before I ever knew a Nicaraguan, I didn't know a Nicaraguan. But when I knew the struggle in Nicaragua was heating up, I was located in California at the time. We turned all the resources of our movement over to the Nicaraguan resistance. I didn't have to know them.
Yes.
I was opposed to oppression of the Nicaraguan people, and I understood a victory for Nicaragua was a victory for the oppressed peoples around the world.
Yes.
You have to take that stance.
Yes.
I don't care if you like me.
Yes.
I'm not a struggling against racism, mm-hmm. which is simply the ideas in the heads of people that keep white people in the center.
Yes.
Whether it's struggling against racism. When you talk about struggling against racism, you know you're talking about struggling against the ideas that white people have
right.
about us.
Right.
How do you struggle against racism? You make white people like you. How do you make white people like you? Well, you learn how to talk right. You learn how to walk right. You know, and you learn how to act right, you know? So if you're struggling against racism, you can't pick up a brick, right? And hit a white guy on the head because he won't like you. You understand? You can't do anything to struggle for your freedom that would offend white people because somehow you lose the battle against racism. I'm not. I'm talking about self-determination. And you have to stand for that. And you must not be afraid of that. You must end this voluntary isolation that white people experience from the rest of the world. People feed this nonsense. This so-called supremacy, but deep in your heart, you know that's a lie.
Yes. Come on,
if it was so supreme, you wouldn't have to murder everybody in Rosewood. You wouldn't have to use terror to keep people subjugated and what have you. You wouldn't have to lock up my children. That's not superiority. Got the largest prison system, the second largest prison system in the world. Texas and California are vying for the second largest. They're tied. The second largest prison system in the world. Second to what? To the United States. Texas and California are vying. They are tied for the second largest prison population in the world. And they've got Africans and Mexicans are the most of the people there. Africans who were brought here as captives and who've been fighting and resisting in a thousand different ways. The African youngster who wears his hat behind him is resisting. The African young man who wears his pants sagging is resisting. The African who talks the way he talks and acts the way he talks and defiant is resisting. Even if it's unconscious resisting, he's resisting. And what our responsibility is to organize that resistance and give it direction and consciousness so that it can fight for its independence. And you must support that.
Yes.
You have supported Obama.
Mm-hmm.
You have supported various, and you know Obama would work for imperialism.
Mm-hmm.
Hell, they won't give me $700 million. And I'm much better than Obama. I've been working all my life for justice and freedom. They won't give me $700 million. So why the hell they give Obama $700 million? You know the Democratic Party is an imperialist party. You know it's never been a revolutionary party. It's been the party of George Wallace and Jesse Jackal and all of those other frauds who attempt to convince people they represent the people. So what you have to do is all that support you've been given to them. You've got to bring it to a genuine struggle to emancipate our people. And this is something, and I'll sit down, that you know is true. Because you can see it concretely. I'm not just blowing smoke. You can find the institutions that we've created that contribute to this question of self-determination that we're talking about. You can see our presence all over the continent of Africa. You can see what we're trying to do in Colombia with African people who are there and in the Bahamas and other places where black people are located and throughout this country. And also you can see the solidarity movement that we're developing here. I want to express my appreciation to the African People's Solidarity Committee, to Comrade Penny Hess, who is one person who has more political integrity than most people I've ever met in my life, who has made a genuine commitment and incredible leader. And I also encourage all of you to buy that book that's been talked about that she wrote, Overturning the Culture of Violence. And then perhaps you can help us to overturn cultural violence, you understand? Because we don't want that. We want to have a decent life, but it's never going to be the same again. And I'm hoping that North Americans and Europeans can really come to grips with this fact. It's never, ever, ever going to be the same again. The genie is not going to be put back in the bottle. The economy is not going to be the same again. A U.S. president is not going to be able to call up somebody and say, shut up in South America, and they're going to do it just because it's said. Yeah. The white man is not going to be able to show up, and people are going to throw out their guns and run away. That's over. Yeah. It's never, ever going to be the same again. Yeah. And what you need to do is stop being fodder for imperialist wars and to protecting the imperialists. Let them fend for themselves. Yeah. Let them fend for themselves. Join the rest of humanity. Let's take these suckers down. Let's fight for the right of all people to be self-determining. That's the only way we're going to ever be able to create this world without borders that all of us want. Don't you want a world without borders? Well, in order to have this world without borders, the peoples of the world have to fight to free themselves as peoples, and you, who live at the expense of the peoples of the world, have to join that struggle against our common oppressor. That way we can all be free. Thank you so much. Uhuru.
That was Omali Yeshitela. Other speeches like this can be found at uhurunews.com. Next, we hear from Wendy Snyder of the African People's Solidarity Committee West Coast and Nyabinga Zimbabwe of the African People's Socialist Party.
We just held our national plenary of the African People Solidarity Committee in St. Petersburg, Florida, and it was really a life-changing type of experience just to be in the world as a white person and be an honest white person, you know, or attempting to be an honest white person and looking at the world and the suffering of the majority of the peoples on the planet. It's unbearable, you know. I mean, there's no accident that we have the highest so-called standard of living here, all the wealth, and we're the highest users of anxiety and antidepressant medication, you know. And I think that what the plenary was really about was giving people that attended the understanding, and all of this, you can watch the video. You can look at the videos of the plenary online if you just go to Uhuru News. But what it was a lot of political education, and it started with Chairwoman Penny Hess, who is a white woman who has been involved in the African People Solidarity Committee from the very beginning, 36 years. And so she's really been informed and has developed the understanding as well under the leadership of the African People Socialist Party of the role of white solidarity. And so she led a whole presentation called The Rise and Fall of the White Nation. And it was, you know, based on the understandings of the Uhuru movement of African internationalism. And it really went into depth into the way in which the European nation was founded based on the attack on the assault on Africa and the rest of the world. And, you know, looking at Europe in dark ages, you know, when Europe lost a third of its population to bubonic plague and was in dire poverty, the rest of the world wasn't facing that. I mean, they were facing, you know, it was the Mayan civilization, the Kingdom of Mali, the Ming Dynasty. You had civilization flourishing around the world. And so, you know, we have to look at that because we're not taught history in a way that makes any kind of sense or helps us understand the world as it is now. So, you know, she went into that to really, you know, to look at how the imperialist system that we live in was founded, you know, off of this assault and attack on the rest of the world. The next day was a presentation about the different organizations of the Uhuru movement. And, you know, I know we're giving out a lot of websites, but there are a lot of organizations of that were built by the African People's Socialist Party. So that was amazing just to hear about everything that's happening, you know, from the political organizations to the development organizations, which we haven't even talked about. All African People's Development and Empowerment Project, which is building a maternal health clinic in Sierra Leone. And we're also involved in touring a nurse midwife from Sierra Leone, and that's something that people can get involved with. We also had, I think the rest of day two and day three were a lot about just how we're transforming our work this year to really go out and, you know, get into the brains of white people, people who, you know, white progressives from all different sectors who can and should and will be a part of this movement. You know, whatever you're doing, you know, you can be in another organization, but you can support the Nurse Mary tour to build the maternal and infant health clinic in Sierra Leone. You know, you can be someone who's just, you know, in school and wants to bring a speaker from the Uhuru movement to your campus. There's all kinds of ways for you to be involved. So we talked a lot about that and how we're going to build our organization. Of course, we talked about Uhuru Freedom Summer, which is going to be held in Oakland this year. Last year it was in St. Pete, Florida, and that is going to be in July, July 9th to the 29th. And that's really important because, I mean, people probably know there's so much resistance in Oakland because the resistance to the system in general, you know, but the history of the Black Panther Party here, there's political and economic conditions here that really make it so necessary for there to be an Uhuru house that's equipped with a commercial kitchen, like I was describing, that's going to help people build businesses and transform the community. I mean, there's continues to be such an assault on African people in Oakland, which is, you know, where I live. So that's a really important thing where people are going to be coming from all around the country to Oakland. So, you know, I just encourage people to go and check out the video from that. I know on Uhuru Radio, they'll be replaying some of the presentations. To learn about it, I think that it's helpful for people to check out Uhuru News and look at the articles and videos, to join, become a member, because if you just, you know, you can just see that it's something that you want to support, you should become a member. To get involved, we have an annual campaign that we do every year called A Day in Solidarity with African People, and this is a campaign that you can join from anywhere. We have something that's still on our website called Take the Pledge. You can take the Pledge of Solidarity and make a contribution and just say why, you know, why you want to take action.
How do African people living in Oregon get involved?
What you should do is, first of all, you can go to our website to find out more about our organization, and to you can email us from there. You can go to our website, first of all, which is ASI, or African Socialist International, ASIUhuru.org. Contact us through that website, or you can email us directly at info@ASIUhuru.org. You can also sign up at the Uhuru News website, which is uhurunews.com, uhurunews.com. That's the way to get on board with the African People's Socialist Party. All you have to do to join the African Socialist Party is unite with our program, which you can find on our website. You got to be 18 years old. In some cases, we can even make exceptions to that one. And you got to be African, you know, to join the African People's Socialist Party. And even if you're not able to join the African People's Socialist Party, if you're not able to be in a revolutionary organization, you can be part of the revolutionary struggle. Join NPDOM, our mass organization. which, by the way, we built in 1991. Kim Jong-un is the International People's Democratic Movement, which we built in 91 specifically to take on this war of counterinsurgency that was being waged against the African community and to bring African people back into political life. We're an organization that launched the Uhuru Radio in 2006, our online, you know, radio station, and subsequently launched Uhuru News, where people can find articles, you know, talking about, you know, explaining what's happening in the world with Africans and with other people. Burns the newspaper, which we've been publishing since 1968. In fact, it's the longest running black power newspaper in the world.
Thanks for listening to Circle A Radio. Circle A Radio airs the first and third Wednesday of every month from 6 to 7 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland. Thanks to Nyabinga Zimbabwe and Wendy Snyder for their time and knowledge. You can hear this and previous shows online by visiting kboo.fm/CircleA Radio.
You can contact the Circle A Radio Collective by emailing us at circlearadio@gmail.com. Tune in February 1st for an hour-long look at the Leonard Peltier case and upcoming International Day of Solidarity events. Thanks for listening.
I'm not a hunter, but I'm told that in places like in the Arctic, where indigenous people sometimes might hunt a wolf, they'll take a double-edged blade and they'll put blood on the blade and they'll melt the ice and stick the handle in the ice so that only the blade is protruding, and that a wolf will smell the blood and wants to eat. And it'll come and lick the blade, trying to eat. And what happens is when the wolf licks the blade, of course, he cuts his tongue and he bleeds. And he thinks he's really having a good thing. He drinks and he licks and he licks. And of course, he's drinking his own blood and he kills himself. That's what the imperialists did to us with crack cocaine. You got these young brothers out there thinking that they're getting something that they're going to make a living with. They're getting something they can buy a car. Like the white people have cars, why can't I have a car? They get something so they can get a piece of gold. The white people have gold, why can't I have gold? They get something to get a house. The white people have a house, why can't I have a house? And they actually think that it's something that's bringing resources to them, but they're killing themselves just like the wolf who's licking the blade, and they're slowly dying without knowing. That's what's happening to the community. You with me on that? That's exactly and precisely what happens to the community. And instead of blaming the hunter who put the damn handle and the blade in the ice for the wolf, that what happens is the wolf gets blamed for trying to live. That's what happens in our community. You don't blame the person, the victim, you blame the oppressor. Imperialism, white power is the enemy. Was the enemy when it first came to Africa, snatched up the first African, brought us here against our will, is the enemy today. That's the thing that we have to understand.